and held up a data pad and a holoprojector. This requires more care.
Discreet!
Dex laughed.
I was the biggest information broker across the core worlds for years. You think I don't know how to be discreet?
Not you, Obi-Wan said, going to the bar stool where Dex pointed. Dex settled in across from it, leaning with his top elbows planted while his bottom two hung loose. They don't teach black market precautions at the Jedi Temple.
Admit it, Obi-Wan. You just wanted to make an old man cook one more dish for the night.
Obi-Wan sat down, adjusting his cloak so it didn't catch. You caught me. Your food is always better than the temple refectories. Though don't tell Master Yoda I said that.
You're in luck.
He whistled.
Played it for two.
He called to the back. Several clangs later, one of the waitress droids rolled through the double doors, a tray balanced on her head.
Good timing. I'm just having my closing time dinner.
One for the Jedi, one for you, boss.
The droid said, the words laced with sass.
Thanks, Wanda.
Dinner was a relative term, as it looked like Dex's staff simply dumped the day's leftover cake onto plates. The bulk of the 6-6-layer cake slices went on Dex's plate, though Wanda did put a single piece on Obi-Wan's plate.
Warm them up for you, sweetie,
the droid said before rolling off. Dessert for dinner? Obi-Wan asked with a laugh. That'll kill you.
Heavy proteins for midday dinner. Heavy sugars for closing time dinner. You're telling me you don't know basic basilisk physiology?
Dex asked, wiping a dab of white cream from the side of his mouth. Sounds like an excuse to eat leftover cake.
Or perhaps it's that.
Dex said, soon followed by his low throaty laugh.
The boss does this every night.
Wanda chirped in from the back.
Says it's better than letting the cake expire.
The sound logic of an efficient businessman. By now, Dex had eaten two of the six pieces on his plate. Obi-Wan decided to be a little more restrained, taking a single bite off the top layer of orange-colored shavings.
So, what can I do for you?
Dex asked between bites.
Need me to find more clones?
Not unless you're looking to add to your waitstaff here. Obi-Wan tapped the holoprojector, and out burst a hologram showing the simulated bombing from the library terminal. What can you tell me about Cato Neimoidia?
You're supposed to pay me first before I say anything. I know I've been out of the game for a long time, but that's how I remember information trading works.
Yeah. Obi-Wan used two forks to lift the thick bottom layer of his 6-6 cake and put it on Dex's plate. Your payment.
Ah, you know how to bribe a man. Okay, Cato Neimoidia.
Dex took in a large breath, flickering lights above causing flashes over the large brown ridge over the center of his skull.
A lot of fog. Trees with glowing oil. Funny-looking mountains, and cities that hang in between them. One less city.
He pointed to the holographic explosion on a loop.
If the holonet is accurate.
Not quite a full city, but yes, it is. And Obi-Wan took a much smaller bite than Dex's. Dooku is whispering into their ear that the Republic is behind it. The Basilisk raised an eyebrow and paused.
Do you think that as well?
He finally asked, the hesitation likely for dramatic effect. His tone nearly caused Obi-Wan to choke on his cake. Of course not, he said, indignation creeping into his reply. No Republic action has been sanctioned to strike neutral systems. It was a serious statement, and yet Dex roared with laughter at it. his bottom right hand slapping the inside of the counter.
You don't believe that some republic system would take this opportunity to weaken the Trade Federation? Somewhere far from the core where there are fewer eyes? Your idealism is adorable.
Dex grabbed a napkin from under the counter and balled it up. He tossed it over Obi-Wan's shoulder, hitting the cylinder-shaped music player against the far wall. It came to life, neon blues and reds lighting up, while a song made up of nothing but percussion instruments started.
If the Trade Federation implodes, a lot of systems could step into that power vacuum.
The point was clear, and any twinge of embarrassment disappeared quickly. Obi-Wan staying in the moment. I don't know if it matters now, honestly. They have just released a statement agreeing with the suggestion to bring the Chancellor to Cato Neimoidia. Dooku wants the Chancellor to go there.
Sounds inadvisable. So I can see why the Separatists are pushing that button.
Exactly. And Palpatine will go, unless I can convince them to accept a Jedi in his place.
The Neimoidians.
The hologram of the bombing fizzled as Dex poked at it, then swiped it aside to pull up data on the Trade Federation's purse worlds.
Unique species. Their brains are wired for calculation. Everything is an instinctive risk assessment to them. Some call it cowardly. I think it's a strong survival instinct, percentages and risk. I worked with some back in my black market days. Quick thinkers. I'd want them on my side. Picking a side means losing half your customers, though.
Dex straightened up, his massive shoulders suddenly looking like mountains as he stood behind the bar.
In most cases.
So that's it. Appeal to their sense of risk. How do you recommend going about that? Obi-Wan lifted his plate. Bring them cake?
They don't have a tidy relationship with the Republic. I'll tell you that. And not exactly with the Jedi either. If I recall, you were involved with some of that.
Obi-Wan's voice dropped his sense of humor. Newt Gunray is considered an extremist by their government. Senator Lott Dodd.
There you go again. You Jedi getting lost in the details.
Obi-Wan tapped his fork against his plate. So, go with cake then?
Perhaps.
Dex stretched out, upper arms reaching overhead while his lower arms clutched his belly.
It's simple, really. Cato Neimoidia is the base of operations for the Trade Federation. Long memories, those Neimoidians.
Make them forget. Obi-Wan waved his hand, prompting a laugh from Dex. I don't know if one Jedi is powerful enough to do that.
Not forget. Show them that sending Palpatine might invite more trouble than it's worth. And show them that a Jedi isn't going to tear through them like a Naboo.
Obi-Wan nodded, his mind reframing options to Dex's new direction.
Remember, it's all numbers to them. It's what got them where they are. See, all the Republic types think it's their ideology.
Dex shook his head with a chuckle.
That's short-sighted. It's a strategy, not politics. Their neutrality is different from the neutrality your old friend preaches.
Obi-Wan had known Dex a long time, going back to a youthful misadventure out in the unknown regions. And though they only saw each other occasionally, his old friend knew just how to needle him. This particular jab was so effective that a grin slipped through, and Obi-Wan raised an eyebrow in subtle acknowledgement. What, old friend?
I don't know. Dresses better than you, striking eyes, Mandalorian royalty. used to call you Ben for some reason?
Dex said with one of his hearty chuckles.
That one. I hear she's quite the savvy politician.
Obi-Wan wasn't going to give him the satisfaction of saying her name out loud, or the fact that the Duchess Satine of Mandalore was maintaining neutrality in the Clone Wars to ensure that her people didn't return to their previous warlike ways. Ah, the simple foolishness of impulsive youth.
You keep telling yourself that, old buddy. I don't know. Why don't you ask her about neutrality instead of an old slug at a diner?
Well, it's simple, Dex. I want a dessert. To prove the point, Obi-Wan stabbed two pieces of cake, one from each layer, then took them down in one bite. So, suppose I convinced him. The Republic sends a Jedi. He continued, still chewing. Then what?
I'd say it starts with the bombing. What was targeted? How was it done, and why?
Obi-Wan clicked a button on the holoprojector to deactivate it, then tapped the data pad before sliding it over. I'm glad you asked. Dex took one glance at the numbers and lists on the pad, then pushed it back.
No. See, you're looking at the wrong thing here. All you've got is facts.
Another eyebrow rose, though this one had nothing to do with Satine Kryze. What's so bad about facts, Dex?
Without context, facts are useless.
The holographic images returned as Dex tapped the pad with his large finger, then started swiping through.
You look at this and you see blast radius, casualty total, potential targets. What is the context?
He asked, tapping his finger with every word of his question. Context is... Obi-Wan took in a breath. We know the Republic didn't do it. Dex started to retort, but Obi-Wan held up a finger. We assume the Republic didn't do it. The Separatists say they didn't. The Trade Federation is neutral.
Whoever did it is an extremist, regardless of side. Correct?
Dex asked. His question came with a tangible weight, and in that moment, Obi-Wan considered that Dex would have made a really good teacher for a Padawan. Fair to assume, and the Trade Federation considers Newt Gunray an extremist.
Extremism only escalates when it's left unchecked. When you stay neutral in the face of it.
The Basilisk gave a knowing grin.
But what if you could turn the Trade Federation into an ally? Make neutrality seem like the...
Dex's chuckle echoed through the space.
Risky thing to do.
Obi-Wan nodded, the remaining food on his plate suddenly forgotten. Dex was right. Going to Cato Neimoidia, treating things strictly as an investigation to clear the Republic's name, that would only keep the Trade Federation neutral. And that neutrality would in itself enable the war to escalate. This catastrophe, Obi-Wan said, pointing to the looping simulation of the attack, may also be an opportunity.
Oh?
Senator Lot Dodd acts as a firewall for the Trade Federation. Getting an audience with their leadership is nearly impossible, but this provides us a direct opportunity to speak to them, to be heard, possibly. He leaned back on a stool, hand over his beard. Especially right now, while the war is young.
Now you're getting it. So the first trick is to get them to accept a Jedi. And while that Jedi is earning their trust, perhaps talking them out of neutrality. Easy, right?
Dex looked over his shoulder.
Wanda!
The waitress droid rolled to the kitchen window.
You need something, hon?
Dax took a bite from the remaining cake slices, then looked at the chrono on the wall.
Brew a new pot of calf, please. We're gonna be a while.
You got it, boss. Cream and sugar in yours, hon?
Oh, no, Obi-Wan said. I prefer my calf straight black.
Chapter 6. Anakin Skywalker.
The view above looked like stars, though Anakin knew better. They both did, really. The pinpricks of light being blinking status beacons or glowing signage from higher levels. That was life in Coruscant's underbelly among its endless rows of massive structures. But it was romantic for anyone willing to pretend the lights were stars, and the industrial fumes puffing from nearby stacks and vents were fog. The artificial night sky made the underworld feel like a completely different place. Not just a location of the Republic, but a portal to another dimension. In Amandasi Market, a new smell came every few meters, though Padme led Anakin to one very specific rusty stall. They sat on a stack of rusty crates, something that may have been in that very location since the days of the High Republic. Did things change down here, in a world of nearly perpetual dark? A population only concerned with the next job, the next sleep, the next meal? Ironic, Anakin thought to himself, because while he wondered about the culture and safety of the local residents, Padme focused entirely on the immediate. The Frana cat in her hands, metallic foil wrapper preserving its heat. This is really, really good, she said, taking large bites without the decorum usually found in governmental banquet halls. Maybe it was because none of the handmaidens lingered around to see it. And, she added, finishing the Frana cat in a gulp, I don't want to know what's in it. She dabbed the napkin against her lips. You haven't touched yours yet. Afraid it's not going to be close to the real thing? The real thing being a franakot, a dish commonly found on desert planets. The term delicacy went a little too far. Variations existed based on local meats and culture, but nearly every desert planet that Anakin knew of had some form of franakot. A dish prepared in a makeshift oven dug into the ground to take advantage of a planet's natural heat and lack of water. After cooking, the local meats and vegetables were served in a thin bread-like wrap. He still remembered the exact steps to go from their home to the Mos Espa vendor with a ground oven right next to her stall. And if they'd managed to get a few extra parts for bartering, his mother would take him there for a bonus indulgence, something far tastier than the bland dishes they typically ate. How did you even find out about this? He asked Padme. Oh, people in government know where the good food is. They talk. And once I heard Bail compare it to a meat griller on a desert world, I thought of you. We just haven't had a chance to try it. Padme's brow furrowed with a sudden hesitation. Annie, I'm so sorry. I know the last time we were on Tatooine, I was just so excited to find this for you. I didn't even... No, it's not that. He put the franakot up to his nose, taking in the aroma of spices and meat. It was close enough that it triggered warm images of the dinner table with his mother. Those are good memories. And this, he said, holding it up, is a new memory. With you. It's perfect. Something's bothering you, though. Sort of. It's not what you think. And it's not this. I just... Anakin hesitated, suddenly feeling like the little boy on Tatooine, so flustered at the sight of her walking into Watto's shop that he blurted out the first thing that came to mind. I have something for you. A gift? Annie, you never need to worry about those things. It's not much. You know, the Jedi and our rules about possession. I can't give you things, he said, opening the pouch in his belt. His fingers wrapped around a disc-shaped gold pendant, its necklace chain dangling as he pressed it into her hand. "But I can give you a piece of me." Padme held it up, the harsh light from the vendor's window enough to put the object in full view. "Is this my Padawan braid?" She traced the braid, now coiled into a spiral and encased in carbonite, as it sat within the pendant's simple design. To new beginnings. Even in the dim light, Anakin could see the flush come to Padme's cheeks, and though she'd been known to sway entire systems through the power of words, her mouth remained open yet silent. But she didn't need to say anything. The look in her eyes was enough. She leaned against him, and even though she put the chain around her neck, her hand still held on to the pendant as if it could keep them together despite the galactic turmoil constantly around them. "Okay," he said after a minute. She turned to him inquisitively. "Now I'm going to try the Frannicat." It was close to Tatooine cooking. Close enough that Anakin considered ways he could discreetly get credits, find a speeder, and enjoy it from time to time. He wasn't sure if war would make all that harder or easier to do. Then he gave himself a mental kick. Here he was, sharing a frozen Jorl cream sundae with Padme in complete anonymity, and his mind wandered back to war. He told himself to lock into the moment, to simply be with her, and he tracked her gaze over to the trio of children sitting next to one of the stalls, scooting a toy pod racer crudely constructed out of a pair of cans, string, and a stick. "What are you thinking?" Anakin asked, though he knew the answer. "Those younglings," she said, digging into the sundae between them. "I worry about them. Will they ever escape the underworld? Do they know what's out there? Do they realize a war is breaking out?" He knew it. She was always thinking about how to make things better. Just like when she sent Sabe to Tatooine in a quest to free those enslaved there. Thoughts probably churned right now about education subsidies for the underprivileged younglings of the lower levels, about how to use her influence as a senator to speak with local governments for an outreach program, that sort of thing. He knew her heart and her mind. And while that was so much of why he loved her, it also kind of irked him in the moment. "I'm sorry," she said, catching herself. "We don't have much time together. We shouldn't spend it talking about the war. It's just..." She held her spoon up to her mouth, paused in contemplation. "Cato ne moitia." Of course. For that brief instant, Anakin didn't care who bombed Cato ne moitia or why. He just wished it would all disappear. That the sunless realm of Coruscant's underworld really was a portal to another dimension. One without the Galactic Senate or the Jedi Order. But then guilt quickly draped over that. An understanding of the civilian suffering on the planet, where right now, emergency medical crews attempted to rescue Nemordians from the debris. "I don't know what to believe with the bombing, or why. The way this war has started, it's not just the violence. It's bad faith and disinformation, misrepresentation under the mask of independence." Her words came at the pace of a public speaker, as if she stood in a floating pod in the Senate chamber instead of sitting with a bowl of frozen Jorl cream. "I know the Republic gets stuck in bureaucracy. I've lived it. But to claim that..." She paused again, her human side taking back over from the politician. "I'm sorry again." "Don't be. I want to hear what you have to say. It's a trap. I don't know by whom or why, but it's a trap. That's why we got to the temple so quickly today. To catch the Chancellor before he made any decisions. I'm sure the Republic Security Council wants to treat it purely as a military operation, but diplomacy is required for these. her head tilted, and she gave that thoughtful look, the one where she squinched her nose up, a line forming between her eyebrows. Now you're just humoring me.
Well,
he said, finally releasing the smile that had been building up.
You put up with the racetrack. I'm returning the favor.
No more war, no more politics, she said with a wave of her hands. No more racing. An idea sparked in Anakin's mind, a variation on a lesson designed to help younger Padawans focus under duress. But surely it worked now. Look over there. He pointed across the small courtyard. Pick something you see, the first thing. Her brow crinkled at his request, but she played along. An exaggerated squint as she observed. I see a balloon trailing that young Quarren. Now what? Keep looking at it. Just stare at it. As she looked, Anakin knelt behind her, close enough that his lips brushed her ear. All that exists right now is you, me, and that balloon, he whispered. Just us, she whispered back. Just us, he said, feeling the warmth radiating off her cheek. And a balloon. A gust of wind blew, something probably created by a combination of exhaust vents, passing traffic, and barely functioning industrial fans. It contained the stink of so many smells that never should have blended together. And Anakin looked, really looked at the lives of the underworld dwellers. Other than the lack of sand and heat, it really wasn't that different from growing up on Tatooine. I want to help these people, Anakin said. I don't know how, but I want to do something. That's my arena. Padme craned her neck, kissing Anakin on the cheek. You just keep us safe so I can do something about it. Still kneeling behind her, he placed his left hand on her shoulder. She reached up and took it, their fingers interlacing, even with their awkward position. And though he could have moved, the moment was a perfect encapsulation of who they were. And he didn't want to break it. Not just yet. I considered requesting you for escort duty, since you're a Jedi Knight now, Padme said, a playfulness to her tone despite the topic shifting it again to their politics. But I decided against it.
Why is that?
Because secret dates mean I get to spend time with my husband, instead of... Her voice changed to a deeper, formal tone.
Jedi Knight,
protector of the Republic. Before he could react, she stood up, then took him by his mechanical hand. Flowers still glowing behind her ear, she tugged him along. He walked in step with her, away from the rusted crates that doubled as stools and toward the path leading out of Amandasi Market.
Wait, we're not done with the sundae,
Anakin said, glancing back at the almost but not quite finished dessert.
I think we can let it go. You'll see.
Padme pulled with intensity and picked up her pace. They wove their way through the mix of underworld locals and curious surface travelers until breaking past the perimeter of the market where their speeder sat parked. She opened the storage compartment and pulled out the bag she'd packed right when they picked up the rental vehicle from the dealer several levels below the planet's surface. She held it up to show him, but he failed to catch anything special about it. It appeared to be just what it was. It's a bag. Am I missing something? It is a bag. But sometimes what's important is what's inside. Padme kept her eyes locked with his, a mischievous smile on her face, as she tugged on the bag's drawstrings, opening it enough to pull out... folded blankets? But the look in her eye gave all the context he needed. This was the Padme he adored. Someone who spent most of her days understanding the nuances of countless beings to do right for them. Yet on occasion, a fire burst through, something brighter and more intense than the hottest sun, when she allowed it. Like now. She walked to the side of the rented speeder, a barely functioning vehicle covered in dents and grime. A far cry from Jedi starfighters or the elegant designs of Naboo transports, and unfurled the blankets in the back seat. A lot of quiet places in these lower levels, she said. You're the pilot. Think you can find us somewhere private?
Chapter 7. Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Only a chair, Obi-Wan kept telling himself. A chair that Qui-Gon never sat in, for a variety of reasons. He'd had a chance to join the Jedi Council, of course, turning it down to remain Obi-Wan's master. And then that opportunity never returned. Qui-Gon's path splitting off into a different direction before being ended abruptly on Naboo. It was only a chair. And yet it meant so much more. Though some time had passed, Obi-Wan still felt a complete spectrum of emotions when he entered the Jedi Council chamber and looked at the chair designated for him. He tried to let each feeling pass, though guilt was often the last to leave. Of course, he wouldn't turn down the opportunity to fill Coleman Trebor's spot, even on a temporary basis. Sitting on the Council was among the highest honors for any Jedi. The responsibility itself hadn't proved daunting. After all, he'd mentored the most powerful and headstrong Jedi in recent memory. The questioning in him came from the title itself. Yoda, Mace Windu, Evan Peel, Eeth Koth, and others, all more skilled or more wise than him, something he freely admitted. For them to ask for his input, intimidating wasn't the right word. Instead, Obi-Wan wondered if he possibly had the proper insight and experience to contribute to such a group. But he had been the one to suggest a Jedi in place of Palpatine. He had stayed up with Dex devising a strategy to present, something he'd done earlier to the Council and Palpatine. And with their blessing, everything led to this moment. All Obi-Wan could do was breathe. Despite the weight of the galaxy on his shoulders.
Our intelligence has lowered the estimated death toll to approximately 3,200. The local government has set up temporary infirmaries for rescued survivors, currently estimated at 300. Up to 1,000 are listed as missing, and we have received more information to refine our simulation of the blast.
Signs of Republic involvement, are there?
Yoda asked the holographic armored trooper in the middle of the council chamber.
Nothing specific that we can see. There are no logs of any activity in the sector. Not from troop movements, transports, or ID tags of individual cruisers. But getting on the surface to investigate up close will offer more direction.
Understood. Thank you, Commander. Mace said. These are the latest reports from the HoloNet. A compilation of news recordings and official speeches appeared in the trooper's place. Aerial images of where the Katasura district used to interlock into the rest of Zara, now a massive gap between Spires and Cato Neimoidia. On-the-ground images of medical personnel sweeping through rubble, the massive makeshift infirmaries and factories and parks as survivors were rescued from the wreckage. The recording interrupted, pausing before disappearing, only to be replaced by Mass Amida, the Chagrian Vice Chair of the Galactic Senate.
Masters, he said, a slight bow to his head. We are ready for the negotiation.
Obi-Wan steadied himself, the chair never feeling more ill-fitting than now. Yoda tapped his cane against the smooth council floor, then gestured to the hollow.
May I present Alu Vayam, Minister of Defense of Cato Neimoidia.
The Neimoidian faded into view to the right of Mass Amida. Burnt orange robe and matching headpiece signaling his status within the government.
And of course our Chancellor is listening as well.
Palpatine's image appeared on the opposite side. Minister I am, Obi-Wan said, nodding.
On behalf of the Jedi Council, we extend our condolences to Cato Neimoidia, as well as the Trade Federation.
The Neimoidian nodded, then held up a single finger.
I appreciate your concern, Master Kenobi. However, we are in a state of crisis management here. I request that your proposal be brief. The Trade Federation and Senator Dodd have decided to stay out of this discussion, given that Senator Dodd has a presence in Republic politics. In full transparency, Separatist leaders have sent us a preliminary report to back up their findings, pointing to suspicious Republic activity. Given this, we remain in support of Count Dooku's suggestion and would appreciate Chancellor Palpatine's swift arrival to discuss matters.
Obi-Wan shot a quick look over to Palpatine. Access to anyone within Trade Federation leadership outside of Senator Dodd was an immediate victory. Even though the Cato Neimoidian officials concerned themselves mostly with local governance, the planet itself was still the center of the Trade Federation's operations. Winning over the Minister of Defense and others could be significant for the Republic. Obi-Wan stood up, the morning light of Coruscant beaming through the projections. I understand. Simply put, we have assessed the situation and we believe that sending Chancellor Palpatine would be a mistake for all involved. In his place, a single Jedi emissary with a minimal investigative support team should travel to Cato Neimoidia.
Minister Iam opened his mouth, but Obi-Wan expected this, and though it would have been polite to let him speak, Obi-Wan continued to lay out all of his points.
The arrival of the Chancellor represents both an immediate security risk and an invitation to escalate conflict. Because of his status within galactic politics, he would need to be accompanied by many layers of security, from guards to clones to possibly even Jedi. Not only would this create unease among a population currently in mourning, it might raise tensions with anyone who has prematurely blamed the Republic for the Katasura tragedy. A single action might thus bring the war to Cato Neimoidia. That is the last thing that your people need. Not because of any political stance, but because they are dealing with an unspeakable tragedy. We propose that this emissary be sent not simply to assess the damage, but also, given the Jedi's training and tools, to undergo a thorough investigation to identify the true source of the attack. At the same time,
Obi-Wan paused to emphasize the oncoming point.
The emissary would be available to hear your concerns and grievances surrounding the war or its impact on your operations. The support crew would be open to monitoring and only there are specialists to assist the investigation. Such a group would be far smaller and far more effective than what the Chancellor would require. We offer the resources of the Republic to you.
Obi-Wan took a moment before looking Minister Iam square in the eye. In good faith. Several seconds passed with only the hum of the holoprojector. Iam looked off to the side, then tented his long fingers before returning to Obi-Wan.
This is an interesting proposal, Master Kenobi. I see your point. We believe such a move would minimize risk for all parties involved. I hope you consider the possibilities and see that as well. We want to assist Cato Neimoidia while avoiding any possibility of violence. This is not about the war. This is about the truth.
Iam again looked away, speaking inaudibly to someone unseen.
You make very good points, Master Kenobi. I have considered the variables of your proposal, and I believe you are correct. This is the best way to work with the Republic without inviting unwanted attention or further violence.
Obi-Wan exhaled and stifled the urge to smile. He'd been in many high-stakes negotiations during his life, but none as pivotal as this. Not just because of the implications for the galaxy, but also as a representative of the Jedi Council, as a Jedi Master. I thank you for your consideration. Sending a single Jedi requires minimal logistics. We will... Before Obi-Wan could finish, a new holographic image appeared. Count Dooku. Tension rippled through the Jedi Council chamber. A tangible shift in the air and the Force.
If I may interject, Minister Iam,
Dooku said,
while Master Kenobi and the Jedi Council speak honorably, might I remind you of the long history of prejudice between the Republic and the Nemordian people?
Master Kenobi, I must apologize,
Iam said.
The Trade Federation has invited Count Dooku to listen in on our discussion.
A series of hollow figures stood in front of Obi-Wan. The unlikely image of Palpatine and Dooku mere meters apart, offering a stark representation of the galaxy's balance of power. But rather than speak, Palpatine turned to Obi-Wan and gestured for him to continue. All that time with Dex culminated in this critical juncture, cups of caff and long hours never being more important than now. The Jedi are outside of galactic politics. What is your concern, Count Dooku?
Outside of galactic politics? I find that statement amusing, given that Jedi are leading your clones into battle while you represent the Republic in a political negotiation. Similarly, any investigatory crew that you bring will be under the employ of the Republic and not to be trusted.
Obi-Wan wanted to say, get to the point, but losing his composure in the face of a liar and murderer would instantly hand over victory to a Sith. He held on to the image of Qui-Gon's calm in the face of danger, a centering he relied upon when needed, and spoke directly to Iam, a new idea sparking in his mind.
I wish to allay any suspicions and fears from you, the people of Cato Neimoidia, the Trade Federation, and...
He looked at the Sith Lord's hologram. Count Dooku. Thus, I will augment the proposal. I will go. By myself. Without any support. The investigation may take a little longer, as I am merely one person. But I am willing to trade this to ensure good faith among all parties.
Dooku raised an eyebrow, and Obi-Wan locked his focus on the Count, even though his instincts wanted to pull away and see Palpatine's response.
Master Kenobi, I believe the last time we saw each other, you and your apprentice tried to murder me.
Obi-Wan considered reminding everyone that just prior to that, Dooku tried executing him, Anakin, and Senator Amidala in a giant Geonosian arena. However, that seemed politically unwise, given the delicacy of the moment.
Consider that a misunderstanding, he bit out. If you haven't been listening, I have promised Minister Iam a commitment to the truth. Nothing more, nothing less.
The truth,
Dooku laughed.
What a way with words you have. Truth can be manipulated. How do we know Minister Iam can trust you?
Trust. Obi-Wan eyed Dooku. Even as a hollow broadcast from across the galaxy, he recognized exactly the game being played here. Every single word from Dooku was both a challenge to him and a threat to Iam, Dodd, and whoever else might be listening. Obi-Wan considered all of that, then launched a counterattack as targeted as a swing of his lightsaber.
You knew my master. You were his master. So tell me, Count, did you trust Qui-Gon Jinn?
The mere mention of the fallen Jedi's name shifted Dooku's expression. His eyes softening,
and mouth turning for a flash before returning to a cold neutral, the first, possibly only, crack in Dooku's armor.
Qui-Gon Jinn was an honorable man.
Now Obi-Wan moved to the offensive, a momentum to his words. I carry his teachings with me every day. If you trusted Qui-Gon, then know you can trust me as well.
Dooku's eyes darted, a quick movement that probably gauged those around him.
Obi-Wan took a moment to do the same thing himself and caught the smallest smirk on Palpatine's lips.
You make a convincing argument, Master Kenobi. Very well. I endorse this proposal, with two further caveats. You must arrive on an unarmed Republic shuttle, not a starfighter or other vehicle with attack capabilities. And you are prohibited from any communications with either Coruscant or the Jedi Council. Of course,
Dooku said.
I have no true say in this. I am merely voicing an opinion. Minister Iyam must make the decision.
Anything that ensures diplomatic discussions with minimal risk of conflict or violence is appreciated. Count Dooku's caveats make sense.
Iyam said quickly, his tone as straight as his words. Obi-Wan considered the possibility of being completely stranded on Cato Neimoidia without any means of connecting with support. He bit down on his lip, mind racing at options to counter the suggestion, when Palpatine's voice broke through.
The Republic accepts these terms. Master Kenobi will depart tomorrow after a day of preparation.
Iyam looked among the different parties in the holo communications.
We welcome any assistance that may help us in our time of need.
I look forward to seeing you in person, Minister Iyam. Obi-Wan bowed his head and was about to signal for the transmission to end when Dooku spoke up.
One final detail, my friends.
He said the word friends, stretching out with a coarse inflection.
I believe in supporting Cato Neimoidia during its time of need. As such, I shall send my own representative from the Confederacy of Independent Systems to ensure that this Jedi emissary remains.
Dooku smiled in a way that seemed sincere, only on the surface.
Honest.
And with that, Dooku faded from the transmission before anyone else could respond.
My research has informed a strategy I suggest we employ for this operation,
Obi-Wan said to the remaining members of the Jedi Council. About 15 minutes had passed since all of the transmissions ended, leaving the assembled Jedi free from the interplay of political and military influence for a more open discussion.
The Chancellor is right. This is an opportunity for negotiation. Considering how all communication to the Trade Federation has gone through Senator Dodd since Geonosis, the fact that he is staying out of this is notable. He took in a breath, running through all of the points he'd discussed with Dex.
The Trade Federation has denounced Newt Gunray as the leader of a splinter group. This bombing, whoever did it, is clearly the act of an extremist of some sort. These are related symptoms, not a root cause. Extremism will only accelerate the war, not bring it to a peaceful conclusion.
All eyes sat on him, without any objection so far.
But we have an opportunity now, a unique one, to show the Trade Federation that remaining neutral in the face of extremism is, in fact, enabling terrorism, and thus making the war more dangerous.
Yoda watched the space for reactions. Ki-Adi-Mundi tented his fingers and leaned forward, scar still healing across his cheek from his recent encounter with General Grievous.
I believe the strategy here to be equal parts diplomacy and negotiation, with the key being to understand the Neimoidians as a people. Because their culture is based on a philosophy of risk assessment, we must build a message around the inherent risk of prolonging the war by letting extremism grow. We must remind them of not just the economic risks of instability across the galaxy, but the potential loss of life as the violence escalates, including, as they have discovered, to their own people. I see a mission in two parts. First, gain the trust of the Trade Federation by successfully clearing the Republic. Then appeal to their sense of risk assessment to actively support the Republic. That move would take away major logistical resources from the Separatists, all hopefully leading to de-escalation and eventually negotiations, rather than more fighting. And above all else, we must show good faith. Obi-Wan took a breath, giving the Council and the Chancellor a moment to process the information. Finally, Yoda broke the silence.
Informative, Master Kenobi. An astute observation you have provided.
While you depart for Cato Neimoidia, we have a new matter to discuss. The Chancellor's request to prepare Padawans for the field, Mace said with a solemn nod.
Padawans for the military?
Obi-Wan asked, unaware that Palpatine had asked for such a thing. Padawans had certainly fought in skirmishes alongside the clones. Geonosis saw more than its share, including Anakin. But further blurring of the lines between the Jedi Order and the military?
The idea caused enough unease in Obi-Wan that it momentarily overtook the mission to Cato Neimoidia in his thoughts.
A recent discussion, interrupted by Cato Neimoidia's tragedy.
We must act in the best interests of the Republic. We are at war, Mace said, as definitive a statement as Obi-Wan had heard the old master make. The Chancellor is allowing the Jedi freedom to assess the best way to balance military assignments between Jedi Knights and Padawans.
Your concern it is not. Focus on Cato Neimoidia.
The various council members murmured an affirmation of vote of confidence in Obi-Wan that explained Yoda's look. He inhaled sharply at this realization, and uncertainty flooded him. Not at the ability to do the job that he'd meticulously researched and planned out, but at the trust the council, the Chancellor, placed in him. Had he earned it?
Obi-Wan let the feeling pass and simply bowed his head. I will begin my preparations immediately. But, he posed to Yoda, my former Padawan is still new in his role. Shall I speak to him about the Chancellor's militarization requests as well?
Skywalker is no longer your responsibility, Mace said, the lines in his face shifting ever so slightly.
Obi-Wan recognized the look. It seemed to be a constant whenever Anakin and Mace crossed paths. Even Jedi had interpersonal conflicts, he supposed. Yoda must have sensed the change in the air, stepping in with his usual softer touch.
Patience and humility, Skywalker and other new Jedi Knights have learned to earn their title, he said. To show the younglings their next task is.
A decade had passed since Obi-Wan handled the responsibility Yoda referred to, and he cringed a bit inside. It quickly turned into a grin at the thought of Anakin Skywalker, the person Qui-Gon believed to be the Chosen One, the young man who charged headfirst into Count Dooku's lightning attack, now headed toward the biggest challenge of his life.
As his former master, this assignment you should give him. Warn him, perhaps. So many questions the younglings ask. So many questions.
Chapter 8. Mil Alabeth.
Jedi initiate Mil Alabeth tried to keep up. She really tried. Come on! Her friend Vivert yelled, and even still, they trailed the group of seven younglings ahead of them, with Mil falling even farther behind. Their footsteps echoed through the large stone hall of the Jedi Temple, and she looked up to catch her friends rounding the corner to get to the turbo lift. First, Ami Kat Ayama, a Syrian girl with thick black hair tied up in a bun. Then Alay and Mela Thuria turned, a pair of purple-skinned Twi'lek twins, their familial bond making sure each always pushed the other forward. Then three more younglings dashed ahead, and even Felix Yabir, the young Celestin with shorter legs, sprinted faster than Mil. They disappeared from view, though Mil managed to make the left turn and see the group of initiates moving quickly, a whirl of voices and excitement that startled the very serious adults on either side of the hall. Finally, Vivert pulled ahead, lingering enough to glance at Mil, as if that single look repeated her words before she sprinted onward. Vivert Stagg's curly hair bounced on her pale cheeks with each step, and she broke farther away. Mil took a moment to close her eyes. She was already behind anyway, and she could feel the anxiety creeping in, so she went back to her recent practice of doing the opposite of her Jedi teachings. Wherever she felt the Force, she tried to push it away, quiet it, keep it at bay. Another voice came through to break her concentration, this one with the robotic ring of a synthesized voice.
Younglings, walk please.
But the protocol droid failed to move fast enough, its arms and legs out of sync and stilted toddling. Protocol droids lacked speed to begin with, but this one had hit a double case of bad luck. First, it received a fill-in assignment with younglings instead of serving visiting adults from other planets or the ones from the main government buildings. And the younglings knew this, tricking the protocol droid before it could introduce itself. If it had said its service number, Mil didn't even hear it. Second, this protocol droid had a loose gyro in its knee socket, slowing it down further. Rumors had the normally quick repair lab within the Jedi Temple being converted into something for the war. Blasters or shields or whatever they might need. She wasn't even sure if that was for the clones or for the Jedi who fought with them now. General, she'd heard the clones say, which made no sense given that the Jedi were either masters or Jedi knights or padawans, or, like her, initiates. It didn't really matter because nothing made sense these days. Like how Vivert and the rest of her initiate friends jogged forward as if nothing bothered them at all. The Clone Wars, they called it, which she supposed was a fitting name since the Republic now used a clone army. But wasn't it a war about systems leaving the Republic? Whatever name they gave it, one thing was clear. Every image, holoclip, or even discussion affected Mil, sometimes making her more ill than the worst bacterial infection. Her whole life, simply being close to violence or suffering, left a deep nausea. But it had only gotten worse with each passing day, after the Jedi returned from Geonosis. Actually, returned was the wrong word for that, because many Jedi didn't return. Masters, Jedi Knights, Padawans, all manner of Jedi lost their lives at Geonosis. And with that, sometimes even being in certain parts of the temple caused headaches and queasiness. Yet today seemed worse than usual. Her friends jumped out of bed, ate quickly, and sprinted down the hall to get to the transport shuttle, their every word stuck on the idea of making their own lightsabers, weapons of war as the Clone Wars got worse with every passing moment. It all made Mil's stomach hurt and temples pound.
Gathering! 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 Her friends chanted in a group,
a joy that she couldn't quite grasp. For several weeks, it was all they talked about. What color kyber crystal they wanted, what type of handle or emitter they wanted to use, or how Professor Hu Yang was so old that the ancient droid supposedly arrived at the Jedi Temple in a big blue box thousands of years ago before ever teaching lightsaber construction.
She'd felt well enough to fake it, laughing or joining in. Besides, lightsabers looked neat, and the way they hummed and buzzed, well, that seemed to be the best part of being a Jedi. But lightsabers meant violence. Violence meant suffering. And though no one could quite explain why Mill's particular connection with the Force worked this way, suffering made her sick.
Younglings!
The protocol droid called before holding a comm to its mouth, its shiny green plating reflecting the endless lights of the Jedi Temple.
Attention, Padawan Quinn. The younglings have finished their meals and are awaiting you at the transport to Ilum.
Understood. I'm rushing to get over there.
Mill knew why the adults seemed tense this morning, actually since yesterday. The only thing anyone talked about in the temple was Cato Ne Moidia. The usual training sessions had been canceled, with the younglings handed off to various droids to work on acrobatics or meditation. The older Jedi rushed to and fro, some with their Padawans and some by themselves.
They're sending the Jedi all over to calm everyone down,
Vivert said over breakfast.
Every system thinks they'll be the next.
Next. Mill considered what that meant. She tried to shut it all out, to instead focus on what she could do. Take a breath, take a step, look at her studies, eat her meal, stay hydrated, all to push herself to the point of getting on the Crucible for the flight to Ilum. Once there, she figured, she could at least get away from all talk of the war and the horrors that just happened on Cato Ne Moidia. She did all of that, and she did it all without connecting with the Force. That proved to be too overwhelming in a time of crisis. Mill pushed forward, her friends already down to the landing platform, while the protocol droid fell woefully behind. Left foot, right foot, and repeat. And she even managed to get some words out.
Coming!
She yelled to her friends.
Wait up!
She forced a smile, despite the burning nausea in her gut and the pounding in her two Zabrak hearts. She almost made it through until something caught her eye. She shouldn't have looked, but the glow of the holo recordings instinctively tempted her focus, pulling her from the path to the docking platform to a small office off to her left. A few robed Jedi gathering around a bright holo transmission. And then, for the first time, she laid eyes on Cato Ne Moidia. It was only a glimpse, a view from the sky of a long stretch of a city draped in fog. Except this city had a massive chunk missing from it. In its place rose lines of dark smoke. That was all Mill took in before her feet stopped, her momentum nearly causing her to stumble over herself. Her tan hands slammed to the floor, and the short tail of black hair dropped down, tickling the side of her face, some of it catching on her horns. She thought of other things, anything to block out the images of the collapsed cityscape, and though she was far enough from the hologram that fine details eluded her, it didn't matter. When she closed her eyes, her connection to the Force brought it all to her unintentionally. Like a navigational map of the fallen region, except with heat-like signatures pulsing. Not as a display of temperature, but an insight into the pain of a population, a wave of bright oranges and reds silently screaming to the ether of the Force.
Youngling, is something wrong? Do you require medical attention?
She said, pushing herself up. By now, the other initiates had gathered at the turbo lift to the platform, and she took step after step, the dizzying connection to the Force still causing her to stumble off-center. She tried to close off from the Force, but her link proved too strong, and it flooded all of her senses.
I'm going to build a staff,
Ami Katayama said.
Spin it around? Slice through a line of battle droids like a buzzsaw.
The mere mention put the image in Mill's mind, as if she were the line of battle droids falling victim to the whirring lightsaber. But rather than unfeeling machines,
The sensation of violence rippled through her.
No, you won't. They're going to shoot 50 blaster bolts at you, and you're only going to block one of them. Too slow.
Vivert twirled, an imaginary lightsaber in her hands.
Felix spoke in his native language, a taunt in words Mill hadn't totally grasped yet, but which caused the others to laugh.
Yeah, maybe I'll just deflect them over to you. Hit you right in the face.
Vivert replied with a laugh.
Mill tried. She tried so hard to keep it together, so much that her knuckles were sore from clenched fists. But the more her friend's banter escalated, the more the violence of their words whipped sensations into her mind, heightening the pain she already felt from the images of the bombing. Her legs gave out, knees hitting the floor, and though she supported herself with one arm, the last thing on her mind was Ilum and the gathering. This morning's breakfast ejected out of her, a collective ew coming from her friends.
M3, M4, what's going on?
Yelled Maelira Quinn, the human female Padawan assigned to take them to Ilum.
It is Initiate Alabeth. It appears that this youngling is quite ill.
Mill, right?
Maelira knelt down, her blonde hair draping over one shoulder. She'd met Maelira before, during other Padawan-led training. But something in her face felt different. Lines of concern that weren't there before Geonosis.
Are you all right?
Vivert came by too, hand on Mill's back. She forced a smile to reassure her friend.
I'm fine, Mill said. I'm ready for the gathering and to meet Professor Huyang, and...
The sudden thought of a lightsaber of all things, an elegant weapon for defense, yes, but a weapon nonetheless, brought the nausea back, and now her head spun as well.
I'm afraid you are not, youngling,
Maelira said. She turned to the protocol droid, apparently named M3M4. Take this initiate back to the infirmary. She's going to need a different assignment while we go to Ilum. Mill nodded, saying the appropriate thank yous and goodbyes as she got herself up. But inside, she made a new vow to herself. She wouldn't just quiet the Force. She would find a way to permanently cut herself off from it. Because she couldn't live like this.
Chapter 9. Obi-Wan Kenobi.
There you are!
Obi-Wan called out. Right before he spoke, he spotted Anakin by himself but stayed quiet. The Jedi refectory was nearly empty, so much so that Anakin must have figured no one would notice if he changed the configuration of the holo displays from a rolling list of schedules and menus to a pod race from some remote world. He waited until Anakin finished and settled into his seat, a simple vegetable soup on the tray in front of him, and gave his former apprentice several seconds to enjoy his setup before barging in. In return, Obi-Wan used the time to consider the scene in front of him. Anakin, trying to bend rules to serve his personal desires. Here, it was minor. Not that long ago, it was far more drastic, and a single memory flashed, summing up Obi-Wan's worries in a few words.
You will be expelled from the Jedi Order!
He'd screamed it at Anakin as wind whipped into their eyes, their gunship soaring over Geonosis. In return, Anakin screamed right back,
I don't care!
But that was the problem. Anakin did care. He cared about so many things, including pod racing, that Obi-Wan felt like he was often the safety lock on Anakin's throttle, making sure Anakin kept from going so fast that he'd spiral out of control. Yet now they were peers, rather than master and apprentice. A war severing that protective tether and letting Anakin drift free among his instincts and his passion. Master, Anakin said, standing up so fast that his knees banged the table, the soup in his bowl sloshing in reaction.
Obi-Wan noticed the subtle gesture Anakin made behind his back, cutting power to the holo display with a flip of the finger.
I was catching up on the Kanon Emoria news and...
It's all right, Obi-Wan said, waving his hand as if he was doing a mind trick, though in this case it simply calmed the soup from spilling farther out. Perhaps peace could be negotiated if we all watched sports and drank ale together. Actually, I've come to talk with you about your next assignment tomorrow. Anakin looked at Obi-Wan, the smallest twist forming on his mouth before it reset to neutral.
Tomorrow? I thought I was shipping out in 2 days to oversee aid delivery to Langston.
There it was again. Obi-Wan would have detected it even from across the room, but sitting right next to Anakin, it was unmistakable. The exact same ripple that he'd sensed earlier when Anakin came across Padme at the Jedi Temple. The cocktail of emotions had a different formula, but came wrapped in the same skin. She was nowhere to be found, so why did he feel this way? A very strategic response formulated in Obi-Wan's mind.
Oh, you still are. Tomorrow's is local.
His head tilted ever so slightly, measuring Anakin's response.
Shouldn't interfere with anything you have planned.
Ah, I mean... Anakin started, before looking over at where the refectory's holographic projection had been. We're meeting with the Chancellor tomorrow. The newest Jedi Knights, that is. I didn't want to miss it.
Anakin, you can catch a feed of Podrace tournaments on any shuttle or transport, if you know how to do it.
Obi-Wan spoke with specific precision, something equally designed to disarm while also dig a little deeper. He paused, letting Anakin take a sip of soup before moving on to a new topic, something just as tactical.
Oh, did I tell you I ran into Senator Amidala at the temple yesterday? It sounds like she and a few other senators agree with the Jedi using the opportunity to speak to Cato Neimoidia. I haven't seen her since Geonosis, but she looks no worse for wear.
Anakin stood up again, a careful move that avoided any table collisions this time. Then he knelt back to the access panel of the holoprojector, his face completely hidden.
If you run into her again, tell her I say hello. 1 second,
he said, tinkering with the configuration.
Can't let anyone know I was watching pod racing.
Now Obi-Wan sat and waited, giving Anakin the space to restore the holoprojector settings, but also himself the space to process what he'd witnessed, not visibly, but through the Force. Because that same surge came at the mention of Padme, like a button being pressed. Even without her physical presence, she occupied his thoughts. And the fact that Anakin didn't even try to shield it created a monumental problem. A vulnerability that endangered both Anakin and the Republic.
Almost got it, he called out.
On the one hand, Obi-Wan felt the pull to confront Anakin now about dedication and responsibility and all the other things Mace Windu had just lectured the group on. Especially in this moment, when the balance of power across the galaxy was at stake. Infatuation and other trivial matters could wait. And as someone who currently sat on the Jedi Council, even on a temporary rotation, did he not carry the responsibility to ensure that commitment was pure and resolute among the Jedi Knights? But then a flush came to his cheeks, something that made him thankful that Anakin still tinkered with the holoprojector. Because Dex knew how to see right through his old friend, highlighting Obi-Wan's own hypocrisy in the matter. And besides, right now, Cato Neimoidia was his priority, and his personal feelings about Anakin could not interfere with that.
There we go,
Anakin said, popping back up. The refectory's usual mix of information returned to the display, and as if the process reset Anakin himself, Obi-Wan detected no further changes in Anakin through the Force.
No one is the wiser. So I hear you're off to Cato Neimoidia tomorrow?
Word travels fast.
You know I should be there with you.
Obi-Wan had heard variations on that statement before,
and in some cases it came with the intimation that Anakin considered himself more powerful, more capable, the obvious solution. In this case, though, his voice, his posture, the concern on his face, all came across as authentic. An unexpected maturity. What an interesting change in attitude. I would much rather have that. But we must abide by Count Dooku's caveats. He has smartly backed the Jedi into a corner. It must be me alone. Anakin's discomfort at the idea painted his entire expression. A stony silence, as if the young man tried to will his way into the situation. Even though I'm sure the Trade Federation would love to hear your take on the galaxy's best pod races. Perhaps you could even inform them of your favorite underdogs. He said, allowing a smirk to come through. Anakin returned the smile, building a bridge between the two. Perhaps even a silent acknowledgement of their equal status. At the very least, it cracked the tension. I wish. He started before his voice trailed off. Another surge of emotion came, like a wave, but rather than a complex mix of feelings, Obi-Wan sensed. Was that regret? I wish Master Qui-Gon could see us now. Anakin often left Obi-Wan flustered, sometimes with his bravado, sometimes with his stubbornness, sometimes with the way that bravado and stubbornness always pulled off the impossible. But this came from sheer surprise. Anakin barely mentioned Qui-Gon to Obi-Wan. How much did the slain Jedi Master occupy his thoughts? I'm sorry, Master, I shouldn't have. He would be proud of you, Obi-Wan said, a pure sincerity.